on the air.
Sir George Schulte, one of the greatest conductors of our time, was born 100 years ago this month. And over two Saturday afternoons, I'll be celebrating his art at the piano, at the helm of some of the greatest orchestras, and in the opera house.
James Jolly.
And not surprisingly, I'll be dipping into the recording that made his name, Wagner's Ring Cycle.
The music of George Schulte in Saturday Classics, this afternoon at 3 o'clock.
If you've recently tuned in, a very good afternoon to you from me, Jonathan Swain. In a couple of minutes, today's early music show. But now with the time just gone 1 o'clock, the news. Two people are in intensive care in Cardiff after a series of hit-and-run incidents involving a van killed a woman and injured 13 yesterday. Witnesses say the driver also assaulted people outside the van. A 31-year-old man is in police custody. Labour has accused David Cameron of weak leadership for failing to dismiss his chief whip before Andrew Mitchell resigned last night. Mr Mitchell stood down weeks after a confrontation in Downing Street, during which he admitted swearing at officers but denied calling them plebs. Lebanese ministers are holding an emergency cabinet meeting to discuss the security situation a day after a car bomb explosion in Beirut killed 8 people, including the country's internal intelligence chief. Opposition leaders have blamed Syria for the blast, which it denies. Thousands of people are marching in London, Glasgow and Belfast in protest at the government's austerity measures. The demonstrations have been organised by the Trades Union Congress. Labour leader Ed Miliband is among those due to speak at the London rally. Police in North Wales have arrested 2 people in connection with a fire that killed a woman and 2 children last night in Prestatyn. A man and a 15-month-old child are both in serious condition in hospital. The Israeli Navy says it's intercepted and stopped a ship carrying pro-Palestinian activists which was trying to breach the Gaza blockade. The Estelle, which is based in Sweden and bears a Finnish flag, was also carrying medical and educational supplies. It's now being taken to the Israeli port of Ashdod. The world heavyweight boxing champion Vitaly Klitschko looks set to become Ukraine's leader of the opposition after his party UDA, which means punch, leapt to second place in opinion polls. Ukraine is due to elect a new parliament next Sunday, and the man known as Iron Fist is being seen as an alternative to the country's mainstream parties. And the weather brightening up for most, but the chance of a few isolated showers. Cloudier in southeast England, without breaks of rain later on. And that's the news and weather with the time coming up to 3 minutes past one. And now here on Radio 3, the early music show, here's Catherine Bott.
Hello. In today's programme, I'm going to be investigating the life and work of Domenico Zippoli, an Italian organist and composer who seemed to disappear from 18th century musical life just as he was making his mark. Well, it wasn't quite like that. Zippoli's life has been described as a journey from the concrete to the ideal, from the mundane to the imaginary. And it is an unusual and intriguing story. The main thing that suits our purpose, however, is that Zippoli wrote some interesting and characterful music. Here's the toccata from Zippoli's collection of keyboard pieces, Sonate d'Intavolatura, played by Dominique Ferrand. toccata by Domenico Zippoli, played by Dominique Ferrand, on the recently restored early 18th century Monticello organ in Corsica. So, let's begin at the beginning. Zippoli was born in the Tuscan town of Prato on the 17th of October 1688, which makes him a near contemporary of Bach and Handel. Zippoli Sr. was of peasant stock, but very ambitious for his sons, and Prato was a musical town to grow up in, famous for its organ makers. When it comes to Zippoli's childhood and education, the curse of the lesser-known composer strikes. We can only make assumptions. And it's impossible to avoid those hopeful, woolly, qualifying phrases so prevalent in some historical biography. Thus, Zippoli almost certainly sang as a cathedral chorister, where, no doubt, he would have been taught by Ottavio Termini and Giovanni Beccatelli, the two choir masters. And he must have been inspired by the sound of the organ. What's not in doubt is that he was confirmed in 1699 and that the prelate of the two cathedrals of Pistoia and Prato was Leone Strozzi. The Strozzi family was to play an important role in Zippoli's life later on. And we can accurately date the beginning of Zippoli's adult musical career to the 12th of September 1707, when he wrote to the Grand Duke of Tuscany seeking funding for his studies in Florence. The Duke's administrators logged young Domenico as a studious young man of an excellent disposition, showing much promise. Within a year, he was a student of Giovanni Maria Casini, choirmaster of the Cathedral Chapel, who invited him to be one of 23 musicians who collaborated on an oratorio for performance during Lent. Among the other 22 were Caldara, Gasparini, Veracini, and Alessandro Scarlatti, inspirational company for this studious young man. And perhaps Scarlatti did a bit of talent spotting. At any rate, a year later, when Zippoli was looking for a post as choirmaster or organist, the Grand Duke gave him an outstanding reference and he moved to Naples, where Scarlatti had just been appointed to the Chapel Royal. It wasn't a happy experience, though. Scarlatti disliked teaching as much as Zippoli disliked being his pupil, and there was a falling out after only a few months. After a short period of study in Bologna, Zippoli headed for Rome and studies with Bernardo Pasquini. More music now, a sonata for violin and continuo played here by the soloists of Ensemble Elima.
Thank you.
members of Ensemble Elima, with music by Domenico Zippoli. In Pasquini, Zippoli found the teacher he'd been looking for, and even though they worked together for only a year before Pasquini died, music and success began to flow. In 1710, the Congregation of St. Cecilia commissioned a setting of the Vespers and a Mass. 2 years later, he was asked to write a Lenten oratorio on St. Anthony of Padua, and for Palm Sunday in 1714, he composed another oratorio, St. Catherine, Virgin and Martyr, for the Church of San Girolamo della Carità. His librettist for this work was a prominent Roman poet, Giovanni Battista Grappelli, who was an habitué of the Palazzo Strozzi, the centre of artistic patronage in Rome. Was the Strozzi family already aware of Zippoli's talents? Had Bishop Leone Strozzi sent word from Padua? There's no evidence, but Zippoli was lucky to come under the patronal wing of the immensely cultivated and generous Maria Teresa Maiorga Renzi Strozzi, who not only supported his work but also collaborated in it. She wrote the libretto for his dramatic cantata Lucrezia and was the dedicatee of the work for which he's most famous, the collection of keyboard pieces which he called Sonate d'Intavolatura, published in Rome in 1716. We've already heard a toccata for organ from the first part of this collection. The second part consisted of pieces for harpsichord, and this was so well received that it was actually republished by Walsh of London in 1741. Here's the partite in Do Maggiore, C major, played by Sergio Vartolo.
Thank you.
Sergio Vartolo, with music from Zippoli's most acclaimed work, the Sonate d'Intavolatura. If you've just tuned in, you've reached the Early Music Show with me, Catherine Bott, and the life and music of Domenico Zippoli. So there he is, in 1716, young, gifted, and enjoying the patronage of one of the noblest ladies in Rome. There's been a flurry of academic excitement in recent years about whether Zippoli and Maria Teresa Strozzi shared more than a love of music. But it would, of course, have been entirely impossible to go public with any romance between a mere musician and an aristocrat, and Maria Teresa never said a word until her death more than 30 years later. But it was rather unexpected, to say the least, when in July 1716 Zippoli abruptly left Rome, and seemingly disappeared entirely from musical life. In fact, turning his back on the prospect of a brilliant career, he went to Spain, to Seville, to join the Society of Jesus, the Jesuit order. Tempting though it is to ascribe this renunciation to forbidden love, it's perhaps more likely that Zippoli felt a genuine calling. The year before, he'd been appointed organist of Rome's Jesuit church, and Jesuit missionary work in Latin America was seen as the great spiritual challenge of the age. A friend wrote of him that he was shy and introverted, capable of feeling the greatest respect for all things. And there is a tradition that when he was made much of on his arrival in Seville and offered the post of cathedral choirmaster, he refused, saying it was not to receive such honours as this that he had entered the Jesuit order. After 9 months' training in Seville, during which time records show that he did at least play the organ in the cathedral, it was time for him to set sail for his new life. On the 5th of April 1717, he and 53 other prospective missionaries left Cadiz for a stormy crossing to Buenos Aires. He is shown in the passenger list as Domingo Tippoli, philosopher born in Prato in the Diocese of Florence, 28 years old, a man of average height, with two beauty spots on the left cheek. His new life as a missionary was about to begin. The Deus in Adiutorium, Domine ad Adiuvandum by Domenico Zippoli, performed by the Coro de Niños Cantores de Córdoba with Ensemble Elima, directed by Gabriel Garrido. Enigmatic composers like Zippoli need champions in order to get their music onto CD, of course, and one of his most passionate advocates is the Argentinian Garrido, who has done a Zippoli in reverse and migrated from his native Buenos Aires to Switzerland. Here are Garrido's own enthusiastic words about Zippoli. one of the most amazing composers in the history of music. Destined for a great and bright career in Rome, he joined the religious order of the Jesuits in 1716 and set off to Paraguay, where he died without having left any musical work. At least, so everyone thought, until scores were discovered, preserved right up until today by the Indians, which made it possible to piece together his life and works. The music we've just heard from Garrido's own Ensemble Elima is a very authentic recording, not least because the Córdoba that those Niños Cantores, singing children, come from, is not the Andalusian city, but in Argentina. And it was to that Córdoba that Zipoli was sent to work after a few days' training in Buenos Aires. He was quite a prize for the Jesuits, who between 1650 and 1750 recruited a number of skilled musicians for their project in what was known as Paraguay Province, because it crossed the borders into Paraguay. For the Jesuits, the main task was to bring the indigenous Indian tribes, the Guarani and the Chiquitos, to a state of peace with the Spanish authorities and Christianize them. Music was one of the main tools of this colonizing process. Zipoli spent the rest of his life combining theological studies with the writing of liturgical music for the delight of Christians and the encouragement of the Guarani. Let's hear the Children of Córdoba again with soprano Adriana Fernandez in Zipoli's Beatus Vir, Blessed is the Man Who Fears the Lord.
Thank you.
Soloists and children's choir with instrumentalists of ensemble Elima and Affetti Musicali Buenos Aires, directed by Gabriel Garrido. The fact that Zipuli was acknowledged in various parts of Latin America as a fine composer has proved very helpful to modern scholars. The great project to Christianize the Indians was successful up to a point, but the Jesuits were expelled in 1767, so the survival of Zipuli's music was helped by the existence of copies made for people in Peru and Bolivia. Jesuit documents show that his music continued to be popular up to at least 1774 in Indian villages from which Europeans were excluded. At the Mission of St. Peter and St. Paul, 9 of Zipuli's motets were listed among the effects after the expulsion of the Jesuits. Throughout the 19th century, various attempts were made to systematise and catalogue this treasure trove of music left behind by Zipuli and others. But as the Jesuit tradition faded in the collective memory, copyists began to forget the conventions of European notation, and scores and parts became more corrupt and illegible with every recopying. It wasn't until 1958 that much of the material was rediscovered, and only in 1983, when Burkhard Junkert was invited to reorganise it all, did a true inventory begin to emerge. Since then, of course, many scholars have gone to work on these Baroque gems. Back to Zipuli. This is the Kyrie from his Missa Brevis.
Thank you.
Gabriel Garrido and his team once again, with music by Domenico Zipoli, Roman composer turned Jesuit missionary. I've talked about the near disappearance of his music and its gradual rediscovery at the end of the 20th century. What did Zipoli himself do to help his music to be preserved? Not much, seems to be the answer. He was fully occupied with his vocation and had renounced any interest in posterity. And sadly, he wasn't given much time on earth to do God's work in the Paraguay province. You'll remember that he'd arrived in Latin America in 1717 at the age of 28. By 1724, he had completed, with distinction, his studies in philosophy and theology at the university in Córdoba. He was ready to take holy orders and become a proper Jesuit priest. All that was lacking was a bishop to ordain him. And before a new one arrived, Domenico Zipoli had succumbed to tuberculosis on the 2nd of January, 1726. He was 37 years old. All the sacred music in today's programme comes from CDs featuring performances directed by Gabriel Garrido, and the problems for lovers of Zipoli's music are summed up in a booklet essay. His life was for a long time a lot of blanks, with a few dates. Historians have muddled his already complicated life even more. Some musicologists even wonder if he really existed. You can see why. In 1729, for example, music by the French composer Michel Corrette was catalogued as being by Zipoli. And Zipoli's two-part life was reflected in his music. His keyboard and chamber works from the Roman years, showing a debt to Frescobaldi and other earlier masters, the liturgical works from his missionary years being very definitely 18th century in style. Could they all really be by the same composer? As the CD essay says, for musicologists, the trip to Seville marks the end of a promising career. But for Gabriel Garrido, nothing in his quite ordinary career could have predicted the impact Zipoli would make by becoming Orpheus to the Guarani Indians. Let's end today's early music show with the Coro de Niños Cantores de Córdoba with Ensemble Elima and Affetti Musicale Buenos Aires, directed by Gabriel Garrido, in Zipoli's Litany No. 1 in C.
Oh,
The Litany in C by Domenico Zippoli, ending today's early music show. The programme was presented by Catherine Bott and produced by Sam Phillips. It was first broadcast in September 2009. In tomorrow's programme, Catherine traces the life of King Charles V through music he would have heard and been associated with. That's the early music show here on BBC Radio 3 at just after 1 o'clock tomorrow lunchtime. A few words now from Donald MacLeod about his new Composers of the Week.
Sergei Rachmaninoff and Nikolai Metner started out from very similar places as graduates of the Moscow Conservatoire. They both made careers in the West as brilliant pianist composers. But while Rachmaninoff, in the interest of a faster car or a new speedboat, would cut a deal or fall in with a promoter's request for something more popular, Metner never would. Rachmaninoff hugely admired the music of his fellow Russian and did an enormous amount to help him in his career. Yet Rachmaninoff ended his days in a mansion in Beverly Hills, while Metner died in a semi-detached in a North London suburb. Metner and Rachmaninoff, composer pianists of the week, weekdays at 12 noon and 6:30.
And just a mention of tonight's opera, Verdi's great Shakespearean opera Otello, in a critically acclaimed production recorded at the Royal Opera House in July and conducted by Antonio Pappano. The young Latvian tenor Alexander Antonenko takes the hugely demanding role of Otello, the respected general whose downfall is his jealousy. Lucio Gallo sings the manipulative Iago, who's determined to destroy Otello. And Anya Hartaros is Otello's loyal but doomed wife Desdemona. Verdi's Otello is our opera on three, beginning this evening at 6 o'clock. Well, back to this afternoon. It's 2 minutes past two, and another chance now to hear the lunchtime concert, first broadcast live last Monday. The presenter is Katie Derham.
Hello and welcome to London's Wigmore Hall for a recital by celebrated classical guitarist, the Swiss-born Christoph Denot. Christoph is much more than just a guitarist. He's a conductor too. He's a lecturer, an all-round enthusiast who sees it as his mission to bring a wider guitar repertoire to a much wider audience. As he told me this morning, the guitar may not have Beethoven, but it can transport the essence of music with warmth, infinite colour and variety, and with love. So today he is going to bring us a mixed programme of homage, taking in pretty much every composer you may have ever associated with the guitar, and some you may have not. We have homage to friends, composers, and to landscapes and places. First, a selection of songs by John Dowland, who was probably the greatest English lutenist of his age, which was the early 17th century. He was appointed to James I's court, and particularly liked to set popular songs of the day, four of which we're going to hear now. My Lord Willoughby's Welcome Home, a great hero fighting the Spaniards in the 1580s, then a jig or a toy called the Shoemaker's Wife, then the frog Galliard, and then Fantasia. Here is Christoph Denot.